Cirrus announces it will not bid for Columbia aircraft. Granger Whitelaw says neither will he. And Chicago Center has its second close call in 4 days. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, November 20th, 2007. ANN has confirmed, in an exclusive conversation with Cirrus founder Alan Klappmeyer, that the company will not bid for the ownership of the assets of Columbia Aircraft, currently on the block and slated to be sold in a bankruptcy auction in just a few days. Klappmeyer noted that Cirrus had been to the Bend plant, come away with strong impressions of the continued viability of the Columbia program, but admitted that making Columbia a viable addition to its own product line, quote, will not be cheap, unquote. Klappmeyer says estimated costs, including those of Columbia's warranty claims, are more costly than first thought and likely to drive the true cost of the acquisition, in both time and money terms, far higher than originally estimated. He says continued development of the jet should remain the highest priority at Cirrus. Klappmeyer also noted the Columbia line lacks the ballistic recovery system, which is now a baseline expectation of Cirrus buyers. Quote, philosophically, it just doesn't fit in well with our view of safety, unquote. The other big shoe that dropped in the Columbia bankruptcy saga on Monday belonged to Granger Whitelaw, who announced that his group has also decided not to bid. That announcement leaves just two serious players left in the bidding for Columbia, industry behemoth Cessna Aircraft and aero newcomer Park Electric. In his letter to Columbia employees, Whitelaw hinted that his pullout decision was based not so much on pure economics, but rather on the costs and structure of the company's liquidation process itself. The venture capitalist and Rocket Racing League CEO noted that his group's court challenge to some aspects of the buyout deal, structured for Cessna by Columbia's offshore shareholders, will result in significant improvement in the recovery of outstanding debts by unsecured creditors. In parting, Whitelaw suggested he believes the bankruptcy process may leave some issues unresolved, and that Columbia employees may yet end up working with his group. Quote, we remain committed to the future of Columbia and are willing to play a role in its future growth should such an opportunity present itself without dishonesty and with the proper time to properly structure and build for its future, unquote. It was another close call for aircraft operating under the control of Chicago Center. On Saturday morning, for the second time in a week, two aircraft came closer than the rules allow in the skies over the Midwestern U.S. The latest incident occurred when a Cessna C-208 Caravan, flying from Chicago's Midway Airport to Soldiers Grove, Wisconsin, came within 1.3 miles laterally and 500 feet vertically of a Cirrus SR-22 that had just departed from Lone Rock, Wisconsin for Faribault, Minnesota. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association was still smarting over a November 13th incident in which two regional jets were vectored dangerously close to each other by a controller at Chicago Center. The union quickly came to the center's defense, saying the facility is understaffed. NATCA's Chicago Center facility rep, Jeffrey Richards, did concede that Saturday's incident occurred not because of understaffing per se, but rather miscommunication between controllers at his facility and their counterparts in Madison about how much airspace needed to be blocked off for the departing Cirrus. As that conversation was going on, controllers at Chicago Center switched the Caravan to the local traffic advisory frequency to land at Soldiers Grove. Richards told the Associated Press, quote, we were not talking to either airplane. This was really a bad situation, unquote. FAA spokesman Tony Molinaro said despite the ominous undertones to two incidents in the same week, overall errors at the Chicago facility have decreased since 2003. There was another close call in the nation's skies last week, although it didn't garner headlines. The FAA says that's because the two planes involved in this example really didn't come all that close. NATCA is claiming that understaffing and overwork is responsible for a breach of minimum aircraft separation November 11th over Fresno, California. The FAA has downplayed that incident. The agency admits that the regs do call for 5 miles separation, but says the two small passenger jets which came within 4 miles of each other were never on a collision course and had each other in sight. What is known is that a controller, working on his seventh day in a row on his second overtime shift, according to the controllers' union, apparently made a mistake. Scott Condi, NATCA president at the Oakland Air Route Traffic Control Center, described what happened. Quote, the controller involved stopped the departure at 21,000 feet and then tried to apply visual separation rules between these two airplanes to allow the departure to keep climbing. The problem is that visual separation rules are only allowed below 18,000 feet, so the misapplication of the rule caused those aircraft to pass dangerously close, unquote. FAA spokesman Ian Greger says that what the union calls a close call was little more than a minor breach of regulations. Conde disputes that assertion, noting the controller in question was charged by the FAA with an operational error. Up next on ANN, TSA must have missed a memo about avoiding holiday airline delays. A U.S. Navy commander is relieved of his command after a DUI arrest. And the Air Force amends its CSAR-X bid specs yet again. You're listening to Aero News.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 20th, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. We're all waiting to see how rising passenger volumes, a declining number of available airline seats, air traffic controllers who say they're understaffed and overworked, and President Bush's delay mitigation efforts converge this holiday travel season. That season officially kicked off over the weekend, and early results, well, they look ugly. On Saturday evening, a single piece of luggage, which was scanned improperly, prompted Transportation Security Administration officials to shut down Terminal 4 at Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport to rescreen every checked bag in the terminal. 30 U.S. Airways flights were delayed by up to 3 hours. In Texas, a local TV station reports that radio communications failure between the east and west towers at Dallas-Fort Worth International halted ground traffic there for 20 minutes Monday morning, starting about 7 a.m. Central Time. Flight delays of up to an hour were anticipated. Other obstacles to timely travel have included fog in Atlanta and throughout Southern California and high winds along the East Coast. Aero News has learned Commander Thomas O'Dowd, commanding officer of Strike Fighter Squadron 122, was relieved of duty last week following his arrest on suspicion of driving under the influence of alcohol at Naval Air Station Lemoore, California. Navy officials report Captain Hal Murdoch, Strike Fighter Wing U.S. Pacific Fleet, relieved O'Dowd November 14th due to a loss of confidence in O'Dowd's ability to lead his squadron. Captain Stephen Foley, the wing deputy commander, served as the acting commanding officer. O'Dowd has been temporarily assigned to commander, Strike Fighter Wing Pacific in Lemoore, pending further review. According to Navy Times, O'Dowd was seen driving his Lexus SUV erratically at 3 a.m. on November 10th by a uniformed Navy security officer. That officer called the Kings County Sheriff's Department to make the arrest. The sheriff has jurisdictional authority over that Central California base. A field sobriety test resulted in an arrest. VFA 122 is the fleet replacement squadron for the FA-18E and F Super Hornet. The squadron's mission is to train aircrew and maintenance personnel to fly and fix the Super Hornet. VFA 122 is based out of Naval Air Station Lemoore. O'Dowd entered the Navy in 1987, according to his official bio, and served in the Persian Gulf War and in Somalia. The Navy has removed O'Dowd's bio page from the Lemoore website. The Air Force really wanted to get moving on its new combat search and rescue helicopter, called CSAR-X for short, but the original contract award to Boeing was canceled after pressure from other bidders, the Government Accountability Office, and even Senator John McCain. At issue was whether the service had complied with the procedures for evaluating competing bids spelled out in its own request for proposals. Now, a year behind schedule, the Air Force has released the fifth and what it hopes will be the last amendment to the request for proposals. The three original competitors, Boeing, Lockheed, and Sikorsky, have 53 days to respond. The Air Force says the evaluation process will follow in a fair and transparent manner, with the help of Army and Navy personnel brought in for their rotorcraft expertise. In the meantime, the Air Force has thrown in the towel on getting all the red tape cut in a timely manner, committed to a timetable for a winner among the bidders announced in summer next year, and will give the existing Pavehawk fleet a $99 million upgrade to keep them in the air until CSAR-X is ready. Airbus parent EADS is heralding a new initiative sure to draw fire from both its unions and some of its government shareholders in Europe. The company says it's looking into acquisitions in the U.S. marketplace. Louis Gallo told the Financial Times the move is needed to reduce the company's exposure to declines in the value of the U.S. dollar. Quote, "It is a sword of Damocles hanging over our heads, and it is a fantastic handicap against our only competitor in commercial aircraft," unquote. Gallo added that U.S. acquisitions, partnerships, and alliances were part of Vision 2020, a corporate strategy which will be presented soon to employees. Quote, "We know it is not easy to manage a U.S. company when you are a European one, but we have to get access to the American market, to produce in U.S. dollars, and for that we must increase our footprint in the U.S., unquote. Vision 2020 also calls for EADS to become less reliant on sales of commercial aircraft and shift the balance in its sales pie chart away from hardware and more towards services. Gallo also noted that the end of the cumbersome parallel executive teams and other changes have greatly improved decision-making at EADS. Quote, "At the level of the executive committee, we are in a new world," unquote. Still ahead, AOPA says the user fee fight will drag on into 2008. NASA will use Antarctica to test lunar housing. And TSA offers tips for cutting delays at airports. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation, the Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, November 20th, 2007. I'm Paul Plagg. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association warns that measures announced last week by President Bush to combat airline flight delays included renewed calls for higher taxes and fees on general aviation. In Bush's exact words, quote, "If we really want to solve this problem, it's time for Congress to modernize the FAA, and we've given them a blueprint to do so," unquote. The obvious reference was to the administration's FAA funding bill that would increase GA avgas taxes by 263% and impose user fees. Bush also called for congestion pricing during busy times at major airports, which could include business jets and smaller GA aircraft. Differences between FAA legislation in the Senate and a more GA-friendly bill passed by the House will not be resolved before Congress goes home for the holidays on December 14th. That suggests that Congress will likely pass a continuing resolution to keep the FAA funded into the first part of next year. AOPA President Phil Boyer noted, quote, "That means we'll pick up the FAA funding fight again in January. We'll renew our efforts to convince the Senate to pass an FAA funding bill without user fees," unquote. Boyer also implored AOPA members to contact their senators when the time is right to remind them that pilots vote too. The barren, frigid landscape of Antarctica has often been compared to the hostile environment presented by the surface of the moon. To the extent that comparison is valid, it's about to save NASA a bunch of R&D money. NASA and the National Science Foundation plan to test a new architecture for astronaut housing on the moon by sending the prototype inflatable habitat to McMurdo Station to see how it stands up to a year of use there. ILC Dover is the manufacturer of the prototype structure. All three organizations will share data from the 13-month test, which will run from January 2008 to February 2009. An inflatable habitat is one of several concepts being considered for astronaut housing on the moon. The inflatable structure looks like a cross between a backyard moon bounce for kids and the James Way hut, familiar to viewers of the TV show MASH. This variation is insulated and heated, has electrical power, and is pressurized. It offers 384 square feet of living space and has at its highest point an 8-foot ceiling. During the test period, sensors will allow engineers to monitor the habitat's performance. Paul Lockhart, Director of Constellation Systems for NASA's Exploration Systems Mission Directorate, points out the need for lightweight. Quote, to land 1 pound of supplies on the lunar surface, it'll require us to launch 125 pounds of hardware and fuel to get it there. So our habitation concepts have to be lightweight as well as durable. This prototype inflatable habitat can be taken down and redeployed multiple times, and it only takes a crew of 4 a few hours to set up, unquote. You know, that's not bad. My family's old 8-man camping tent took a crew of 4 a few hours to set up. The Transportation Security Administration has one more tip for reducing delays through busy airports this holiday season. Pack your carry-on in layers and be neat about it. TSA spokeswoman Ellen Howe told USA Today, messy bags are more likely to present confusing x-ray pictures and require screeners to pull them aside for hand checking. The busiest travel days this week will be the day before Thanksgiving and the Sunday and Monday after the holidays. The Air Transport Association predicts more than 2.5 million travelers a day. That's 20% above normal levels. This tip for better travel is brought to you by the TSA. The folks who Saturday night delayed 30 U.S. Airways flights out of Phoenix Sky Harbor for up to 3 hours because one bag was found not to have been screened properly. And finally, could TSA screeners do their jobs better if they played Halo 3 on their off time? After all the brain power and money that's been thrown at the problem since 9/11, the Boston Globe reports that few efforts have made any real improvements in the ability of the human mind to notice rarely occurring shapes on an X-ray, whether it's a tumor on a mammogram or a Glock in a carry-on. Psychologists have figured out that moving objects are more easily detected by humans than those which hold still. That comes as no surprise to experienced hunters. But they've also found that exposure to the outline of a particular object in an attention-getting way makes the human mind more sensitive to it for a brief period. It was during study of this second effect that researchers found that subjects who played violent first-person shooter video games for at least 5 hours a week dropped their error rates in simulated TSA-type screenings from 25% to 15%. The idea is still pending real-world testing and peer review, but combined with the other suspected effects of violent video games, we have two bits of advice for future travelers. First, expect more efficient screeners in the future. Second, whatever you do, don't make them angry. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Doug Cairns, a former British RAF pilot and instructor who lost his career to a diagnosis of type 1 diabetes, came to the U.S. to regain his medical, then flew around the world to encourage others fighting the disease. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.